Down to us through the centuries from the dawn of time before the digital age. Listen at freedomizerradio.com or at augustbooks.com. Call in with your thoughts and comments at 319-527-6208. Press 1 to join Ed live on air. And now, here is our host, Ed August.
Such praise before the fact, because I haven't proven any of that yet, at least not today. And today is a kind of a changeful day. I'm sort of I'm still getting over our trip up to Flagstaff, up to spend a couple days at the 7,000 foot elevation, and it didn't really agree with me. So please be patient. I'll try to do the best I can. I am not sure whether the people that are listening are into books, if they're bibliophiles or collectors, or if some of them are just Ed August's fans that have followed me over from my other show that I have on Blog Talk Radio, and that is Ed August, Psychic Astrologer. So this is a different hat. I'm wearing a different hat on this one. This one I would do music, you know, art. Well, how can I do art over the radio? That's a tough one. And books, of course, with books at least, I may not be able to show you the cover, but I can read you some of the contents. Today, I was just cruising the ABAA, that's the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America website, looking at various books, looking at items for sale by members. These are the most recent books that have come in. They have 515,796 items. I bet a lot of those early ones are probably sold already. It's like 900 pages of books. But wow, people really collect nonfiction according to their hobby interest, according to their livelihood. You know, what kind of books are there? Are they something specialized? For example, here we have a catalog of shorthorn cattle at Oak Grove Stock Farm, Manchester, Delaware. 1876. Well, okay. So they want $150 for that. So it's a catalog of shorthorn cattle. I bet they have like descriptions or drawings of every single cow and calf, I guess. Huh? Here's the Colorado River and its utilization. Washington, D.C., Government Printing Office, 1916. Well, the Government Printing Office books for various agencies of the government are usually not extremely valuable because they made quite a bit of them. They printed them in Washington. They printed them so there'd be enough to go around. This one, even though it's dated 1916, it's for sale at $35. By the way, if I happen to mention a book that you sound like you're interested in, you know, write me at ed@edaugusts.com or go to my website, Ed August's books.com/radio-listen. That's radio-listen. And we can communicate about these books or any books, anything that you like. Pocket map of your state, Moline, Illinois. So they must have like 48 different one of these. The book looks like it's 100 years old. So that might have been before, well, that's definitely before Alaska and Hawaii. That's $55. Pikes Peak region. Have you ever been to Pikes Peak? I was interested in Pueblo, Colorado, because the cost of living is pretty low there. And I don't know. I just don't know. You know, it might be better than living in the desert. We're here in the Phoenix area, the Valley of the Sun. The Valley of the Sun. And it really is sunny here. As a matter of fact, I'm looking out the window. I've been looking out the window for about 5 days, and there's no clouds. Never been a cloud in the sky. But this made me think of it because it's Pikes Peak region, Colorado Springs, and Manitou. I don't know where Manitou is, but it looks like the book is at least 100 years old, maybe 120 years old. They want $35 for that. Sometimes travel guides can be worthless. Well, not really worthless, but, well, you know what I mean, because they make so many of them. Or they can be quite valuable. It just depends. You find like an 1875 travel guide to some interesting part of Europe, you know, or America, it can be worth a lot of money. Preliminary report of explorations in Nebraska and Dakota in the years 1855, 56, 57. So it's 3 years of exploring Nebraska and Dakota. This is before they broke up Dakota into North Dakota and the South Dakota. So I'm not sure when that happened. This is Washington, D.C. Now, this is the government printing office, but it's 1875. So when you think, you know, that took them a while. The preliminary report was for 1855, 56, 57, and it took them until 1875 to bring it out. Unless maybe this is a second edition. They want $250 for that one. Excuse me. And $250 is probably right for something of that kind of vintage and interest, at least if you're, you know, if you're interested in North in the Dakotas and Nebraska. This is offered by Back Beyond Books, ABAA. Back of Beyond. Yeah, that sounds like a really good name for, like, distant travels and explorations and things like that. Here is the Secret Oral Teachings in Tibetan Buddhist Sects. That's S-E-C-T-S. Secret Oral Teachings in Tibetan Buddhist Sects by Alexandra David Neal. Actually, she's usually called Madame Alexandra David Neal. And Lama Yongden. It was published in San Francisco in 1967. After, I believe, her death, but I'm not completely sure of that because she was a very long-lived woman. She graduated from the Sorbonne, and she had wonderful knowledge of Tibetan, well, of Buddhism, and she learned the language, you know, of Tibet. I don't know how she managed to do that. I guess that was already available there. And she snuck into Tibet, I believe, for part of the journey, which was on land, up the trails over the Himalayas. She dressed like a man, and nobody would say no because, well, obviously she was from the West. They didn't know how men or women were dressed or looked like and from Europe. They go into Tibet at that time, and that time was like 1910, 1920. You know, there's a lot of people that traveled to places like the Himalayas from 1910 to, from, say, 1914, 1920. And you know what I think they were doing? They wanted to get out of Europe and the First World War. You know, for a while, the Parisians thought that they would be conquered by the dreaded Hun, the Germans. And so I think they came within 50 miles of Paris at one point. But anyway, a lot of people that could got the hell out. There's another guy who, now this guy was German, and he also went to Tibet. Oh, man, why can't I think of that title? I can't think of the author of the title. But he, was it 7 years in Tibet or something like that? 7 years in Tibet. And he was a young man of, he could have gone to the war. But, well, he was also a scholar and a student, I believe. And so, you know, he really enjoyed that journey. And this one, Madame Alexandra David Neal, she recorded some things like the Tumo, T-U-M-O, ceremonies of the Buddhists in Tibet. What they would do is they would get on some little patch of ice, and the monk was naked except for a loincloth, and they would wrap an ice-cold, wet towel around their whole body. And they would leave him there for an hour or two. And the idea is that the powers that these monks had acquired to master the elements were enough for, I think it was all males that did that. I know she didn't try this. That would have been amazing if she had. But anyway, they were able to dry out the towel, and they did not catch pneumonia and freeze like a popsicle, which you'd think they would. There was one other thing that she noticed that she thought was amazing, and that is that there is an ability that some of these monks and gurus in Tibet had of bouncing down a road. They would literally bounce, and therefore they were able to go like four times, five times faster than if they were walking. And it sounds a little suspicious to me, I must admit. And yet, I've been touched by the wing of the metaphysical, the mystical, and I'm not one to say that this could not be done. So, and I forgot what the name of that is. We'd actually have to go into a book like this one, Secret Oral Teachings, or another one that also came out called Magic and Mystery in Tibet, I believe it's called Magic and Mystery in Tibet. That's from my memory, so I'm not 100% sure of that title, but what a strange character. Now, she retired to Switzerland or something like that up there when she got back, and she lived there to be 100 years old exactly, unless she lived to be 101. And then, you know, she on to the next plane of being the next world, whatever. You know, the Buddhists and the Hindus had this refreshing idea that there is not just an afterlife and a heaven or hell, but that we're going to be reincarnated as, you know, in different worlds and as different creatures, animals, plants, people. And if we've led a very good life, we'll get a very good reincarnation. I mean, I don't know, that kind of works for me in a funny kind of way. I'm no Buddhist, but I could see how that would be comforting to some, and probably not so comforting to others. I know that where the river, goes best, Varanasi is the new name for an ancient city, which is, well, what the heck is that? The Ganges, of course, the Ganges. The Ganges flows to the sea, to the Indian Ocean. And at Varanasi, the Hindus and others, you know, come and disrobe and dip in the water because they want the blessings of being in the Ganges. Well, that works fine, except every once in a while, somebody goes out just a few feet too far and they get swept away, especially if there's a spring runoff, or maybe it's a summer runoff there because of the way that they have those cyclonic storms that come across in the summertime. So the Ganges, if it's high and if it's got a real quick flow, it can grab some of these penitents, some of these worshipers, and just whoosh, take them downstream. So the case was reported that a man was, just offshore there, and he sees a guy float by, and about, you know, 3, 4, 5 feet away from him, and he could have reached out and grabbed him, although it could have also meant his own demise if he had. And anyway, the way that he explained it was, well, he's getting his karma, you know, he must have earned his karma, and that is what that was. He goes to worship, and look what happens. So, how awful? Yeah, my partner in crime here says, how awful. She's my technician. Suzanne, hello. Suzanne, well, she's waving at me. She'll come in a little while, I think, when we start talking about something more for Mad Sci. She has a show that follows mine called Mad Scientists Exposed. So you can imagine that's going to be kind of freaky. But the place where our interests overlap is about things like UFOs, aliens, strange realities, politics. Well, I never talk about politics. You know, I never talk. I have to be, somebody has to put their hand around my neck, you know, and push my face onto the desk here before I'll talk about politics, because I know how dangerous that is to talk about politics. Next book, George M. Cohan's Grand Opera House, Chicago, Cohan and Harris. I don't know what, let's see, George M. Cohan, well, I believe he was a New Yorkster. I believe George M. Cohan was even, he wrote songs and maybe even appeared. Didn't he appear on stage like on some of those vanities and some of those things with all the girls that, you know, are kicking their legs and stuff. I'm going to click on this and see where it goes, see if it gives me a full size. No, title. I don't know if I want to do that. Oh, here it is, George M. Cohen's Grand Opera House. It's a picture of a minstrel or a joker. that's kind of cute. It's published by Cohen and Harris Managers, so he was a big businessman. This is a booklet advertising the George M. Cohen Grand Opera House in Chicago, published circa 1912 in good condition. Colorful pictorial wrappers, staple bound, moderate wear to splines and all edges. Text block is moderately toned and unpaginated, 7.5 inches tall. They only want $20 for it. Now, what I think about this book is that I can see it's got a dog-eared cover where the cover has been folded at one point. It looks like there's maybe some tape on one of the corners, but the cover illustration is very nice. Of course, George M. Cohan is an American icon. Didn't he do songs like Over There and stuff? Didn't he do a lot of World War I songs? George M. Cohan was responsible for a lot of World War I songs. Wow, what's the movie that had James Cagney in it? James Cagney, and he played, she's not quite old enough to remember James Cagney. Reruns. Oh, yeah, so did I. Yeah. Excuse me. They were reruns for me, too. I was not old enough for this either. Now, I think why this is only $20 is that it's in the same category as sheet music. And you know, you can find beautiful sheet music and you don't have to go to an antique store. Just go to a flea market or a used bookstore, or even a what do you call those places where you walk in, like the one on Speedway? No, the place on Speedway that was like a thrift, what would you call it, a thrift store? The one on Speedway at west of, you don't remember, the one I wanted to go to all the time. It's called a thrift store, isn't it? Can't remember the name, but it's a thrift store. Yeah, thrift stores. Anyway, I've had some of my best finds of this kind of stuff in thrift stores, but it's not easy to sell either. So what happens is if somebody passes on, they go into the nursing home, and about 100 of these little packets of sheet music show up at a thrift store after they don't sell at a estate sale or whatever. They sometimes have the most glorious cover art, just cover art. Then you open it up, and it's like 1, 2, 3, or 4 pages of the actual songs, the songs and words. It's usually like one of these per song. So this one, even though it's about the Grand Opera House, kind of fits into that category. So that's why it's not that valuable. So let me go back to the page that I was on. This is fascinating. There's about a couple of hundred dealers that are, well, you know what? That might not be right. There might be 500 or more dealers on the ABAA. They're very well known, very reputable. And one thing about the ABAA dealers is they're legit. They pay $200 or $300 or something every year to belong to the ABAA. So there's no fly-by-night type of guys on there. When you buy a book from a dealer on the ABAA, you're going to get that book. He or she will spend the requisite time to find it and pack it and send it to you, and it should arrive described exactly as it was mentioned in the advertising. Wyoming Peace Officer, an autobiography by Joe LaFours, Laramie, Wyoming, 1954. Okay, this would have Western Americana interest. Western Americana, $45. Some of these are a little bit obscure. Some of these would fit well on the shelf of like an engineer, mechanical engineer, an architect, or a builder of some kind, like, for example, or an inventor. How about this one? Descriptive catalog of Johnson's hydraulic filter, square or round chambers with latest improvements and patents. Brooklyn, New York, John Johnson, 1880. So it's 1880, and it's all about Johnson's hydraulic filter. I don't know what kind of filter. Maybe it's a water filter. Anyway, it's $85. That's interesting. The report of the directors to the shareholders of the United Railway of the Havana and Regla warehouses. Havana and Regla. I don't know where Regla is. I guess it's in Cuba. 1901 to 1904. That's $65. Actually, that's not that interesting, is it? Some of these are not that interesting. Okay, anybody who likes Native Americans and Indian history and that kind, statements of a delegation of Ogallala Sioux, chairman of the Committee on Indian Affairs, United States Senate, April 29th and 30th, 1897, relative to the affairs of the Pine Ridge Agency, South Dakota. So some kind of thing was going on at the Pine Ridge Agency in South Dakota that I think this delegation of Ogallala Sioux Indians was not happy with. And so this is another one from the government printing office in Washington, 1897. Again, offered by the Back of Beyond Books, ABAA. Well, I hope you don't mind. We can go through a few more here. I have some ideas for the rest of the show that's going to be a little different. I'm not going to just continue listing something. Orient Express by Graham Greene. I don't know if, you know, I've got to click on this one because, you know, of course, Agatha Christie wrote a novel about that murder on the Orient Express, but this is just Orient Express. Graham Greene was not really a mystery writer. I don't believe he was, you know, see what it says. Love, death, humor, romance, drama, ride with hungry and desperate young Carol on the Stamboul train. The Stamboul train. So Stamboul goes through Istanbul, I believe. Istanbul. What a strange spelling, huh? So this is about, what, 1930? Yeah. I'm looking at the dust jacket, which shows the train on its tracks. Somebody sitting in an armchair with some guy sneaking up behind her. The spine has a woman in the arms of a guy dressed in a tuxedo. I don't know, but it's not murder on the Orient Express. But, you know, it's something like that. So let me go back to where I was. And the interesting thing is, this is the most expensive book that we've seen so far. And it is a fiction. It is not by any means a nonfiction. I think every other book we've seen so far is a nonfiction. This is $1,150. So I'm thinking, okay, whether to plunk down $1,150 on this book. You know, when I first noticed old books, kid, and my brother used to drive me to Berkeley and up and down University Avenue, and, there's another, Telegraph Avenue. Telegraph Avenue and University Avenue. He would take me into two or three bookstores. He was looking for certain kind of things. Wow, I remember that when I was in this one bookstore, there was a little tray next to the cash register, and the guy said, you know, 50 cents. 50 cents, anything in the tray. And I picked up, it was an 1858 50-cent piece, silver 50-cent piece, and it had been plugged with, you know, like a hole, like somebody had shot part of it, or they had maybe strung it into a necklace. And a 50 cents! I actually had 50 cents in my pocket, and I was able to buy that. I had that coin for like 40 years, you know. That was a wonderful story, and all the books in, say, around 1960, okay, when I was 11 or 12 years old, when you go into one of these used nerve bookstores, they're all with the raised spines, you know, and all like on leather and calf, and many, many books from the 1700s and the early 1800s, maybe the 1600s and 1500s. I know I nailed some of those in later times, but you don't see that in a used to rare bookstore anymore. Not really, maybe just a very, very few really high-level bookstores, but not a general bookstore like this one was. But anyway, so what happens if you buy a book there? If I had bought a book there, if I had bought four or five books for like $5 a piece or $10 a piece in 1960, well, those books would have been probably $50, $60, $75. 30 years later, 1990, and then they would be probably about $100 now in 2017. Now, I'm being very general there, but I'm just saying that there has been what they call a profit march of old collectibles, and books certainly come into that category. There's a profit march of old coins, old stamps, old dolls, old comic books. As you know, Golden Age and Silver Age comic books. I still wish I had mine. Don't you wish you still had yours? And what happens to comic books anyway? In my case, they were all torn up by my brother. My brother was mad at me for something, and I had a bread box filled with about 50 comics from the mid-1950s, and he was so angry, he took that whole pile of comics and just took it and tore everything up into tiny little pieces. And my mother was standing right there. Oh, no, no, my brother realizes that we've had issues over the years. I mean, I was a little shit when I was a kid. That's probably why. I had written in, when he was away in the Navy, I had seen his glorious signature. He had this really fancy signature in his book. I wanted to imitate it, so I took a pencil or a pen, and I wrote my name in all of his books right next to his signature. So when he came back, he was just furious. He was furious. His nostrils flared like an angry bull, you know. And he made short work of my comic collection. Now, I don't know what they would be worth now. They'd probably be worth like $5,000, you know, probably. Gee, I don't think they were autographed. But I had Uncle Scrooge number one. I had a lot of Disney, but I also had Superman and Superboy and Batman and all kinds of good stuff like that. Hey, I got a whole big, long box of comic books once in a store that I had. It was, you know what I mean by long box? It's not a banker's box. This one is about twice as long as a banker's box. And it was filled with a bunch of comics with plastic, you know, plastic wrappers on each one. And I was not really into comics at that time. This was in the 1980s. And the two guys who brought in the box says, well, what do you give us for these comics? I said, well, that's not really my specialty. I mean, I don't know, $20. And they looked at each other and they were discouraged. But you know what? They've been hauling this comics around from place to place. I know it. So I said, oh, okay. So I gave them $20 and they left. And then about an hour later, before I could do anything in these comics, 14, 15-year-old little, I was going to use a four-letter word, but I'm going to restrain myself. They came in and all I heard up from the next one was, wow. Complete set of, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And I said, are you selling these? I said, they just came in. I haven't had a chance to price them. So I'll price them. And then, you know, I was a little put off that they were, you know, five young teenagers there who looked like they were going to disturb my other browsers. And so kind of, you know, I wasn't as polite maybe as I should have. So anyway, that night, next morning, I realized somebody had come in through the back window, cut through the screen, came through the back window. The whole box, including the box and the cover, was gone. And also they had rifled my drawer and took all the quarters. I had quarters, and they had taken about $10 worth of quarters that I had there. And the comic books, they had not touched anything else in the store. But those kind of things happen. Those kind of things happen when you have something of enormous value. So what this was X-Men, a complete run of X-Men from like the 1970s, I don't know, 60s and 70s, and it was probably worth $5,000. I had no idea. I had no idea that this box that I had $20 was worth about $5,000. But these kids knew. These kids were into comics. I don't think that would happen today because I don't think that many kids are into comics anymore. Yeah, they're into manga. They're into manga and hentai and all that stuff, anime and stuff, you know, definitely. So I'll do just one or two more here. For whom the bell tolls. Ask not for whom the bell tolls, for tolls for thee. That's just from my memory. By Ernest Hemingway, 1940. You know, this is odd because he doesn't say first edition. I got to click on it to see if it's first edition. He wants $875. The dust jacket is starting to crease at the top and the bottom of the spine, and I can't really get a good look at the back cover. of the dust jacket. People really look at these dust jackets, you know. If the dust jacket is perfect, then the book goes up like twice in value, you know. Now, I've seen this book many times from the bell tolls, but it's a, but I've seen third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh printings, you know, but the cover of the book looks the same. I've never seen For Whom the Bell Tolls in an actual dust jacket. So let's see what it says on here. First edition, 1940. There you go. Remember, first editions are worth their weight in gold. Charles Scribner's Sons, 1940. Original oatmeal cloth with red bands with dust jacket. First edition of what is often considered to be Hemingway's masterpiece. Cited during the Spanish Civil War, his longest work. This is a copy from the first printing with an A on the copyright page. Well, you know what? That's a bad way of putting it. I would never have written, this is a copy from the first printing, because it sounds like it was copied from the first printing. You see what I mean? With the A on the copyright page. Scribner's and several other publishers, you turn the page from the front page and get the copyright page, and lo and behold, there's either an A under the copyright information or there's not. And the A is the only way to tell if it's a first edition. It includes the first state original dust jacket with the price of $2.75 and with no photographer's credit on the rear panel. Okay, so those must have been second or third edition. You would get the photographer's credit on the rear panel. The volume is in just about fine condition, none of the usual flaking of the red pigment on the spine. As always, the end papers are are darkened due to the original glue that was used. Ah, yeah, you know, the glue sometimes messes up the end papers, those blank papers, just beyond the front and back covers. The jacket is very good, plus entirely without, and then it's truncated, so I can't see what else. Well, I would have to quibble with that. How does he get very good plus for this jacket? It has creases and, I would say, tiny tears. There's some kind of tiny tear about a third of the way down on the spine of the dust jacket, and tiny tears at the bottom, and one thing that looks like it would be a chip. If anybody touches this one place on the front of the dust jacket, the little piece of paper there is going to fall off, and it's going to be a chip. And when you get a chip, then chip dust jacket, you can't call it very good. So anyway, but $875. Now, we'd have to look it up and see whether it's a good price or not, because I don't know. What I was getting at before was, would it be a good deal to buy this book for $875? Well, the odd thing is that you wouldn't want to buy an expensive book for short term. There's no way that you can count on making any money in, let's say, 3 years or 4 years, 10 years. If you can put some of this stuff away for 10 years, then you might double your money. But again, that might have something to do with inflation and the fact that, you know, everything costs more. Heck, when I was a little kid and we went into Ferrero Brothers Market in the border, right on the border between Santa Clara and San Jose, I would get often a comic book, and the comic book would be 10 cents. And then I would love to get some barbecue potato chips. I became addicted to barbecue potato chips when I was about 5 years old or something, 6 or 7 years old. And so that's what I usually was able to squeeze out of my mother, is a comic book and maybe a bag of potato chips, or I would choose one or the other. And as I recall, in those days, it was 29 cents for a big bag of barbecue potato chips, and now, of course, it's like $3.95. Well, a good brand, you know, $2.95. So the food products have gone up at least 10 times, probably closer to 20 times in many cases. Real estate has gone up 20 times in value, and old books have also gone up by, I would say, 20 times in value. This book, first edition, For Whom the Bell Tolls, in, let's say, 1958 or 1960, what would that have cost? I think it would have been like $25 or something, because I remember the late 1950s, and that was when, you know, $25 was a fortune. I mean, gee, you could get a motel room for a week, you know, on $25. You remember that old song, King of the Roads? where he says, let's see, what is the line in King of the Roads where he says, 4 hours of sweeping. Does it sweep in fours? No. 4 hours of pushing brooms. Boom, 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 boom. Get an 8x12-foot room. Ba-da-da-da. So 4 hours. No, it gets a $2 room, I think it is, right? So to get a $2 room for the night, he's making 50 cents an hour times four. Well, that's inflation for you. Add a couple zeros onto that if you're in a good area, right? I mean, we just passed by the chance of spending $200 in Flagstaff to get a room. I know somebody else that spent a night there, two nights. Did they spend two nights there, two nights in Flagstaff? And it was $200 a night. But that was during a night. But that was $400 for the two nights. Holy smokes. See, you could have gone out and bought up an estate sale of old books for $400, you know, that could go up in value. Instead, you get two freaking nights in a strange bed, you know, small room, probably, you know, the shower, the sink, the toilet are not working properly. I don't know. I'm just skeptical about that. That seems like a waste of money to me. But so I think it's possible that any of these could continue going up in value. There was, they knocked the slats out of the prices in 2008 and 2009. It took till 2011 or 12 before they even started to recover. But for a couple of years with these old books, these kind of book dealers, these really first-class book dealers, like the ABA would have a conference, would have a convention, you know, a show, and a tenth of the people would come to the show, a tenth, you know, just some really hardcore browsers and buyers. I mean, the collectors never could entirely go out of the picture, but I think what happened is people expected the prices would go down. Well, no, these dealers did not want to sell for 50% off, but some of them did. Some of them actually sold for a big discount just to get some of their money back and to pay the bills. You know, that's what you got to do. Some of these dealers are paying thousands of dollars a month for their digs. I mean, for their stores and separate apartments and everything else. It's not easy. It's not easy for them. Well, coming up right now, we're going to take a break, and my technician here is going to help with that. My technician knows which buttons to push on the Blog Talk. On the Blog Talk Radio and the Freedomizer Network, there's a push a button and you get about 200 different things that you can play, including laughter and screaming and, you know, all kinds of this. And funny one that I just can't. What's that funny one? That really funny one that just knocks the. I mean, that makes me laugh every time I see it. Chupacabra. It's the Chupacabra. If she can find Chupacabra on here, I would love to play that for you because, and the funny thing about the Chupacabra is most of these ads on Freedomizer are selling product. Of course, they're selling product or they're telling people about some of these shows and services, but this one is purely mirthful. Here we go.
Ay, 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 Le Chupacabra, porque?
Are you tired of losing your herd of goats to the Chupacabra? Are you worried about how you're going to eat because your goats were viciously ravaged? Call SNL Chupacabra Insurance today. SNL provides fast, speedy claims in the event of your goat farm being destroyed. Low rates, fast service, and professional attitude is what makes SNL your choice for Chupacabra Insurance. Call 855-CHUPA-NO today. 855-CHUPA-NO for a free rate quote. SNL Chupacabra Insurance, just in case the Chupacabra comes.
Ay, 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 Le Chupacabra!
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where Freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are seven of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save Around, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
Tune in to the Mad Scientist Expo Show every Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, where we discuss the science and the news today, take a closer look, and expose where fraud is being committed for various agendas, from money to politics to downright pure evil and malice. Of course we trust science. It's scientists we don't trust. Tune in and join the conversation on Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, on Freedomizer Radio.
Hello, we're back. Last week I was going into, I think I've done it for several weeks now, I went into a book that I'm in the process of writing right now. It has to do with books that formed my young life, because when my brother went into the Navy, I was left with his room, and his room was crammed with, you know, 8 shelves of books up and down the wall and 4 shelves on the other side. I didn't really have much stuff then. I had a few toys and whatnot, and maybe an end table and a little single bed in the corner. But man, I didn't get an AM radio until I was just turned 13, I believe. When I was 13, they gave me an AM radio, and that's when I started listening to, you know, Golden Age rock and roll and stuff. So that changed my life. But one of these books that also changed my life, because it sort of made me think and ponder and gave me a background on society and culture and history, was called Predictions, Pictorial Predictions from the Past by John Durant, A.S. Barnes & Company. So Barnes & Company was, even then, it ended up turning into Barnes & Noble, you know, 20, 30 years later. But this was in 1956. It was just Barnes & Company. 1956, so I was about 7 or 8 years old, and my brother brought this home. So probably from about 9, maybe ages 8 or 9, I loved to thumb through this book, because every page has a cartoon, a caricature, a drawing in it. Here is New York in a few years from now, from the 1881 Harper's Weekly. By the way, these the magazines and newspapers that they drew these cartoons from included Harper's Weekly, Life Magazine, Judge Magazine, a lot of magazines that aren't around anymore, huh? Like Judge. I don't think anybody's even heard of Judge anymore. Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair was good. Who else? Puck. P-U-C-K, Puck. I thought Puck was maybe English rather than American. I'm just thumbing through here and I'm looking. So anyway, so this says, New York in a few years from now, 1881. When cartoonist Thomas Nast drew this sketch of New York's future skyline in 1881, Trinity Church steeple was the highest point in the city, and so remained until 1893, when a 17-story building was erected in Lower Manhattan. So in this remarkable pen and ink forecast, there's Trinity Church in the center of the sketch, but on every side of it are skyscrapers crowded on top of each other, next to each other. Just a crowd of skyscrapers, 20, 30 stories each, and of course engulfed by towering buildings on all sides, which is, of course, is exactly what has happened. So I guess the church steeple must have been 250 feet, maybe only 200 feet. And then when a 17-story building was erected, okay, so maybe it was only 150 feet, and so that a 17-story building would top it when it was constructed. Here is a 1901 Life magazine cartoon of chaos on a turnpike or highway. One old geezer has a horse cart driven by a horse, and there are four or five autos, really flaky little cars, look like they're made out of plastic. And they're like, people are just being knocked for a loop by these. People are falling out. One woman is pointing at this cart, and there's a cop on a little motorcycle that's coming up to see what's going on. So the picture predicted with some degree of accuracy the modern superhighway and the consternation that would take place if a horse and wagon should ever appear upon it. So I think what the humor there is that in 1901, when this came out, almost everybody still had carriages and stuff. Pardon me. And if somebody came by in one of the first automobiles, the horses would sometimes go a little crazy. They were freaked out when they saw those. And so this turns that on its ear. It shows the people in the autos being freaked out at the sight of a horse cart. So let's see here. 1899 Life. The 20th century, according to cartoonist F.W. Reed, will see a bridge spanning the Atlantic upon which trolleys will ply between New York and London in 7 hours. Okay, 7 hours on. Well, I think that's impossible to build an actual bridge across the Atlantic. That'd be nice, but it doesn't make. Pardon? Oh, okay. But it doesn't make much sense. Doesn't make much sense in the real world, A romantic idea. So I don't know what the longest bridge in the world is. About 20 miles, 30 miles? I know there's some mighty bridges, but nothing across an actual ocean. 1903 Life. There's a man on a ship, a transatlantic liner, sitting in a deck chair with a blanket on him, and he's really upset. He's looking into the sky above where he is in the distance, and the sky has words there. Caesar, Gordon, Citibank, blah blah blah. Your daughter left with the coachman. Your daughter left with the coachman. That's funny. Your business is a failure. Whatever. Okay. So what this refers to is wireless telegraphy. In 1903, wireless telegraphy was a novelty, the first official transatlantic telegram having been sent only the year before. Ship-to-shore messages were yet to come. When they do arrive, mused Life magazine, think of the terrors ahead for the steamship passenger. He will be plagued by a swarm of troublesome messages, among them calls for margin by his stockbroker. In 1929, the year of the great stock market crash, 26 years after this picture appeared, the oceanic air was indeed filled with frantic messages from Wall Street. Well, as I said, predictions. So the predictions are very predictive. Now, here's a funny one. A man and a woman are sitting on looks like a park bench or something. No, it's not really a bench. It's a very comfortable-looking seat. It must be in their backyard. And the woman is, well, she's wearing Victorian clothes, and the guy has a top hat and a carnation in his buttonhole, and they're dressed very well. The title of the picture is 1950. This is done in 1895. They're looking forward 55 years into the future. and there's an airship. You can just see the tail end of it. It looks like a dirigible. It looks like some sort of like a flying dirigible from what you can see of it. It's some kind of lighter than aircraft with propellers on the back of it. And the a forecast of the status of the airplane in 1950. The illustration was captioned, quote, "Why, there goes a flying machine." So it is. It's the first one I've seen in 10 years. I can remember when the sky used to be covered with them. Curious how soon these fads die out. Well, well, I think that's one that was completely wrong. Flying machines were not fads. But maybe in 1895, you know, that was just a couple years after the... Wait a minute. When were the Wright brothers? Did they... Was it 1903? I think it was about 1903. So this might have been 5 or 8 years before the Wright brothers. So the only kind of craft that they knew about really were lighter-than-air, dirigibles, balloons, stuff like that. Here we go to the 1877 Puck magazine showing outdoor advertising. Outdoor advertising will reach such a stage that the Hudson River Palisades, you've heard of the Hudson River Palisades. You remember that song, Palisades Park? Yeah. Took a walk in the park. Boom, boom, boom. Swinging place called Palisades Park. Da, da, da. Well, you know this song. Come on. It's a good song. You're making me cough. Excuse me. So anyway, so here's two people on a ship, and they're looking, you know, one has a monocle, one has a pair of binoculars, and they're looking at the Palisades. One of them has opera Nero. It shows Nero fiddling on top of what looks like a temple or a building or something. The next one is Lather's Soap. It shows a baby in a bushel basket or something with mom lathering him up with lather. So now these things, these advertisements are like 100 feet high, and they maybe more, and they reach up all the way to the top of the Palisades. The third one is Humbug Hall. Ketchup the Marvelous mind reader. So it shows somebody is like running from somebody, and it looks like he's going to bite him on the hand or something. I like that. Ketchup the Marvelous mind reader. And the third and the fourth one is Bernhardt Fedora. Well, Sarah Bernhardt, of course, was she approaching the end of her career? No, 1877, she was probably at the height of her career, Sarah Bernhardt. Bernhardt and Fedora, and there's this very skinny-looking woman with her hands in a position like she's going to cast a spell on somebody. The next sign is Yammer's Bock Beer. It shows a big barrel of beer with some big loony guy sitting on top of the barrel of Bock Beer. The next one is Cheapstein, the ticket scalper. And so somebody with a saw, and with a saw he's cutting the rates on a piece of paper. So ticket scalper. Okay. And then they have about another dozen of these, but they're kind of washed out, and you can't really read them. So I just thought that was funny because, you know, the outdoor advertising has really gone through so many changes. What was it that, oh, man, I'm trying to remember something, and I can't think of it. So let's see. 1899 Life, captioned is The Last American, 1976, which, of course, was the bicentennial year. This picture shows the sole surviving Yankee, attired in the apparel of his colonial forefathers, before being ridiculed by the immigrants of many nations. Behind him stands the crumbling Federal Hall building, New York, where George Washington took the first oath of office. There's a statue of George Washington. Yeah, the building is crumbling, the pillars and everything crumbling. And so this guy, he looks a little like Ben Franklin. Or you know what he looks like? He looks like the guy from Quaker Oats. You know, Quaker Oats with the... What? What's his name? They said his real name, Wolfred Brimley. I'm being told that the name of the guy on the wolf on the Quaker Oats package is Wolfred Brimley. So anyway, and he's got he's got something, I don't know, looks like an umbrella or something in one hand. And he looks quite annoyed and flustered because here is you can tell by the facial characteristics, one guy is Irish and he's waving a kind of stick at him. A couple of these guys are Middle Eastern, maybe Indian. Here's a guy with a Chinese hat and everything. They're making fun of him. They're making fun of him because he is the last Yankee, the last. And, well, some of these people are white. It's not a matter of color. It's a matter of national origin. And the next one. And the next one is an 1889 judge showing exclusively for ladies. So here's the doorway of the club exclusively for ladies. And there's a bunch of guys standing in the doorway. They're all dressed in suits. Suits and almost, like opera kind of wear and stuff. And they're looking aghast, you know, with their eyes wide open and their mouths ajar. And they're looking at this room that has some women sitting on a sofa. Both of the women on the sofa are smoking a hookah. And at the table, there's three women that are playing cards. There's money on the table, and they're playing for money. It must be poker or something. And I would say a lot of these women are attired in a very masculine kind of way. And then there's a beer bar. Let's see, what does that say? We wanted club rights. We got them. We wanted club rights. We got them. So this is back in the day. Oh, and there's a pool table in the distance. And they're queuing up to shoot some pool. And on the wall are a couple of guys. Like, they look like boxers. Their fists up like they're going to fight. So this was a change from if you go into a club in a gentleman's club, and on that wall would be pictures of lightly clad females, maybe topless, you know. That's very common in some bars and some men's clubs, of course. But so here they turn it around. They got the half-naked guys on the wall instead. So I don't know. I think that's funny. And, the men are still very surprised at this. They glance through the door, but they can't come in because they're guys. 1899 Judge, a club exclusively for ladies will soon become a reality, said Judge in 1889. And when it does, this is what it will look like. Well, I think this has probably happened. And now, of course, you also have, clubs of women's interest and clubs of many lesbian clubs and things like that. So I think there is such a thing as lesbian clubs. Sure, there's got to be. You go to a big city and there sure is. Well, let's see here. American summer fashions for 1920. American summer fashions for 1920. Here's a guy with wings on his hat and wings on his feet. He's T.D. Florist, you know. And then the woman is dressed like a Venus or Aphrodite, and she has a parasol, and she's gowned from the waist down, but she's topless. They don't really show that much, but you can see that she's definitely topless. The guy is also topless, and you can see his legs and everything. So they're, let's see, what are they saying? Oh, opposite page. They're not even deigning to comment on this one. So in 1901, they thought that in 1920, people would be scandalously, walking around half naked. And actually, it was about 1920 when the Roaring Twenties came in and when, you had the, what do you call those kind of women that are flappers? Pardon me. Flappers. Yeah, flappers. And of course, their dress by 1920, 1925 was a million miles away from the dress of 1905, 1910. Gone were the big, thick skirts and stuff and the gloves and the, but back in, 1905, 1910, it was still outrageous for a man to be able to see a woman's ankle. You know, it was Kraft Ebbing, in a book on sexual psychology, mentions that there are some fetishes that were common around the turn of the century, like around 1900, that had to do with like a gloved woman's hand or the ankle. You know, like if a guy sees a woman's ankle, that is extremely erotic, you know. Well, because you couldn't see the ankle back in those days, you know. So this is like totally changed. Now you can see everything that you possibly would want to see. Probably not even want to see some of the stuff that you could see. Okay, 1895 Life magazine. This 1895 view of football of the future may be slightly exaggerated. Okay, so what we have here is a big stadium. Tons of people, thousands of people in the stands, lots and lots of detail. So there's a football game going on, and they're scrapping, they're piling on and fighting, and literally parts of their bodies are flying off. Somebody's being punched in the nose. Somebody's standing there with a bleeding finger. Somebody's stomping on somebody. And there's somebody's hand and somebody's other hand and a head that are flying through the air because people are being ripped apart. So this is something critical of the roughness and violence in the sports of that era. And what is rougher than football, right? I mean, baseball. There's nothing rough in baseball. This 1895 view of football of the future may be slightly exaggerated. No one has yet suffered decapitation on the field, but the conception of the giant stadium to come was not too far off. When the picture was drawn, the giant concrete football stadium was unknown in America. The first one was built by Harvard University in 1904. I didn't know that. I thought, you know, I don't know when Yankee Stadium was built. Well, they say Yankee Stadium was the house that Ruth built. So you need Babe Ruth in there before they could build that stadium. And that was probably 1920 or 1925. 1904 Life. This is what the average college president will look like when football dominates our universities. Well, of course, football does dominate the universities. And so this average college president is a hulking big guy. He's got huge hands, huge shoulders. He's dressed well, but he's wow, he looks more like a wrestler than he does a football player. So I wish that I could describe these a little better to you. 1904 Judge. A predatory bear-shaped Russia absorbing the map of Asia and Europe. Okay, so somehow what they've done is a bear going across half of Europe and all of Asia. One paw of the bear is French Indochina and Siam, which of course would be with Saigon and Vietnam now. It would be called Vietnam. And then Port Arthur, Korea, would be the area of the mouth and the face of the bear. And then the other paw of the bear is Kamchatka, the Kamchatka Peninsula, that now belongs to Russia. And the thing is staring, and the rest of the body of the bear goes right back to Norway and Sweden. Scandinavia is the tail of the bear, and then St. Petersburg is the butt of the bear, because actually, okay, Norway and Sweden are the tail, and then you go to the Baltic and the North Sea, but the actual St. Petersburg is actually up the butt of the bear, if you look at it, because there's a little inset, there's a little opening there, so they're being really funny. So Arabia, Turkey, and Spain are the two feet of the bear. It just covers all of Europe, and Great Britain is behind the bear, sort of almost tucked under the tail, and it shows one of these symbols of Great Britain, you know, these banker-type guys with the top hat, and he's on his knees, and he looks terribly upset, you know, by this, and he's got a pole on his shoulder with his goodies and his money or whatever. And on the other side of the Empire of Japan, and it is made to look like a Japanese military officer diving into the ocean. If you could imagine Japan, because it's long and thin, and it really looks like Japan, but he's diving into the ocean to get away from this bear, because the bear's going to gobble him up. So it says, this is a too accurate for comfort prediction. So this was in 1904. Map of Asia. Asia is crossed out, and Russia, it says, published at St. Petersburg. Yeah, so St. Petersburg at that time was the capital, not Moscow, evidently. I kind of like this book, but let's see, where are we on time? Have we knocked off another 20 minutes or something like that? I'm sorry. I think we're due for another commercial. Thanks, folks. We'll be right back in a few minutes.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
Call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient. As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency, causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are 7 of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save Around book, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
Solutions to Delusions. How do you do this? Well, join me every Friday night on the Delusion Solution radio show from 6 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time and 9 to 12 midnight Eastern Time right here on the Freedomizer Network, where we will be discussing and discerning the times by making sense of current events and bringing to light much-needed topics. Our calling number is 347-324-3704 to listen in. Watching with your ears and listen with your eyes. I'm your host, Tara Dawn, and I'll see you there.
Do you want to live a happy and healthy barefoot lifestyle? Join Barefoot is Legal Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time, to learn your rights to live a barefoot lifestyle. There are no laws against bare feet in public, and we are here to dispel the myths and empower you to stand up for your rights. Join full-time barefooter and victims legal advocate Nick Pierce on Freedomizer Radio or the Barefoot is Legal radio show Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific, and check out barefootislegal.org.
Hello again. So in the last 20 minutes or so of the show that we have left, let me delve into books related to one of my specialties, which is metaphysics, mystical book. I hate to use fortune telling. I hate to use that one. Occult, you know, astrology. There's many divisions of the subdivisions, you know, crystal balls and stuff and palm reading and tarot. And they all kind of go in the same direction. They're all very helpful to let people know about what's happening between them and the cosmos. And, you know, so many people feel that their life is worthless or that they just happened here by accident. No, you didn't come here by accident. You have a whole chart set up for you that tells the best side of your life and the worst side of your life. Or that, what I mean is your nature. And if you can control and get rid of the bad side and glom onto the good things in that chart, then you will be successful. It also will have, of course, information on there of relating to your love life, your partnerships, what kind of, it's not so much what kind of lover you are, how about what kind of lover is your lover? Is it safe for you to get deeply involved with a person if their Saturn is opposite your moon, or if their Mars is right on your Pluto or something like that, you know? You don't want to be in a relationship that's similar to the charts when you compare Hillary Clinton with Donald Trump. And I've done that, of course. I mean, I've compared these two charts and many charts of people who get along, but then there's charts that just fierce competitors. Haven't you had that experience of meeting someone for the first time and you're either taken in and charmed by their charisma, and next thing you know you're going off someplace with that person, dating them, and seeing them, going to bed with them. But then there's others that, oh my God, from the very first time that you meet them, if you could avoid ever meeting them again, you would, because you just feel that they could be somehow hurtful, destructive, jealous, you know. That's what life seems to consist of, is opportunities for maximizing, you know, your potential when you get with certain people that are very positive for you, or falling into a trap by being with someone who you're just not suited for. Yep, I remember I was very successful earlier in life. I was in real estate. Lots of things were going good. And then I made the mistake of falling for one of my real estate owners that was listing a couple houses with me. And oh my, that was a mistake. You know, you get the wrong person in your life and everything, it's almost like everything will be eroded and taken away from you. People lose families that way. Holy Toledo. But there's the first book I'm picking up right now is Asteroid Name Encyclopedia by Jacob Schwartz, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z, Ph.D. He's a Ph.D. So this has, I don't know how many thousands of these. Is there about 3,000? There's about 3,000 named asteroids in here. And I know it's hard for people who are not in this field. What it's like is the planets have certain meanings. Venus, the planet of love. Mars, the planet of work and war and sexuality. And Mercury, the planet of the mind. Well, you know, they go along with the classical attributes of those gods and goddesses, and indeed the planets that they're associated with. But then you find something like this book here where there's 3,000 asteroids that have also all kinds of meanings that go back to ancient times. I would say half of them are ancient times and half of them are not. So here you have, for example, oh boy, what the heck is that? It starts with AU. Let me see if I can find it in here. Ausonia, Aurora, why isn't it on here? Atropos, Atlantia, Athene. Okay, there's an asteroid that has to do with gold. It's the Roman or Latin word for gold or golden. And when you see that on a chart, if you use that and you look at, on a person's natal chart, they'll show something having to do with wealth. And are they going to be wealthy or not? And where in the chart are they going to make this money? Is it going to be, if it's in the eighth house, the house of inheritances and bequests and stuff and death, then it has to do with an inheritance. If not, then it's someplace else. There's a lady in California who's had much to do over the last 20 years with the Kaiser Hospital chain, and good and bad, a lot of it recently bad. It's her own fault. Well, I warned her about it. But anyway, she had the asteroid Kaiser, K-A-I-S-E-R, rising in her chart. So it just predicts that there's going to be some kind of big thing between her and Kaiser Hospital. So, you know, I'm not going to say any more about this, but this has led to court cases, and my friend here is just very ecstatic, amused, just amused by that, not ecstatic. So it's really weird. I mean, you know, if there's an asteroid named Prague, then that person is likely to have something to do at some point in their life with Prague, Czechoslovakia, you know. I don't know, but this asteroid named Encyclopedia is massive. Well, maybe not massive, about 400 pages. It's all indexed. It's all indexes of these kind of planets. Luce, like if I look one up at random, Luce, it's asteroid 1292, discovered the 17th of September 1933, named after the discoverer's wife. Luce is a form of Lucy, Latin for light, and the name of a 4th century martyr who is the patron of sight. Lou, Lucia, Lucine, Lucinda, Luz, comedian actress Lucille Ball, Peanuts comic strip character Lucy. It's also a bay in Scotland and a bayou in Texas. So anyway, so there's many meanings to Luce. So you just, you know, you experiment with some of these and see if they have any kind of effect or influence, you know, in your life. Lucifer was 1930. Boy, that was the same year that Pluto was discovered. Lucifer, it's the 1930th asteroid. It was discovered in 1964 in Flagstaff, Arizona. Must have been at the Lowell Observatory, because we were just up there, not too far from Lowell Observatory. Lucifer, the rebellious archangel, identified with Satan, Latin for, quote, bringer of light, Greek for phosphorus, the designation of Venus as a morning star, known as Hesperus when an evening star, and Venus as a morning star, the archangel who rose the highest and sank the lowest to Satan, astrologically interpreted as a sometimes disruptive bearer of divine light. Well, I don't know, but you can't do both. I don't think you can do both. Can you be a bearer of divine light and also be disruptive? And he's a liar too, right, traditionally. So I would be very cautious if you see somebody that has the asteroid Lucifer in a prominent place in their chart. It reminds me of Lilith. Lilith is like that. The symbol is a crescent moon on top of a Venus cross, you know, the cross of Venus. And that can cause a lot of trouble if it's in powerful, important places in the chart, or even if it's transited by a planet. You know what? This may be more apprehensible. Instant Palm Reader, A Roadmap to Life. It's a big format book. It's by Linda Domin, D-O-M-I-N. You got to love this book. Came out in the 14th printing was 2011, so the former title was Palmoscope. I like this better, Instant Palm Reader. So this has hundreds and hundreds of drawings. Let's see, it's got three drawings on every page, and there are 240 pages, so there's like 600 drawings of hands. And if you're looking at this, you can see, okay, you got sections here on the lifeline. Interference line from your thumb attacks the lifeline. Uh-oh. An unfavorable liaison from your early life appears without invitation to haunt you about past differences. Be rid of the pesky individual tactfully but as swiftly as possible. A confrontation is inevitable. Serious setbacks are suffered if you pick up where you left off. What, they get this from one line crossing your lifeline? Really? An ascending line from your lifeline stops at the headline. And here's a drawing of it. Here's the headline. Here's the lifeline. The lifeline goes under the thumb, and the headline goes straight across the palm. And this shows like a line connecting the two, which is unusual. You discover the true nature of your life's destination. You begin to accept yourself for what you are, recognizing limitations and taking pride in assets. This comes as a welcome relief after a long period of bewilderment. With this, you become an independent thinker and learn to rely less upon the opinions of others. So anyway, I'm just reading a couple of these things here. An island. Ooh, if there's an island situated on your headline. I know islands are not that great. So the headline has to do, in many cases, with your career. What are you doing with your head anyway? Some people have their head stuck in the wrong place. But, you know, so any kind of career and stuff. I know if the headline ends in tassels and stuff, or if it curves down, you know, under the little finger, then to the side of the hand, that could be a mental breakdown of some kind. You could be a workaholic. Something is causing you to work too hard and too long, almost to the point of exhaustion. You tend to work in an excited or confused state. You don't know when you are overdoing it, but afterwards you feel it. Okay, so an island. Yeah, and the island would, to me, it would show a time of the life when you feel that energy, that confusion. So in other words, that confusion could show a period on the headline of between 30 and 40 years old, 45 and 50 years old or something, or near the start of the line. That'd be the closest to the index finger and the thumb. That would be like maybe 15 or 20. So it would show a difficult teenage year. This is fascinating. And of course, you know, if you have the time to look up your lines, you can see, you get all kinds of really fine distinctions. Lines from your heart line reach close to your headline without cutting it. Okay, so there's lines coming down from the heart line, which is the first line under the fingers. Your life is centered around the opposite sex. The opposite sex have the power to corrupt your thinking and manipulate you for their personal gain. Your greatness is not appreciated because you have not learned the tools of self-assertiveness. Excuse me. So anyway, so that's a good book on palmistry. And let's see what else I have here. The Only Way to Learn About Relationships, Volume 5. This is Techniques of Comparing Charts. And here is a book called The Astrological Houses, The Spectrum of Individual Experience by Dane Rudyard. I once had a collection of about 10 books by Dane Rudyard, but they're very philosophical. I didn't find that they were the most practical words of wisdom. Let me see. 123 in Phoenix. Tarot Made Easy by Nancy Garen, Garen. Get immediate, specific answers to your most pressing questions with this amazingly simple new method. Well, the method is that she's got every card in the tarot deck. And let's just take one at random. No, we're not going to take that one. That's too nasty. The tower. No, I don't like the tower. The star. Let's look at the star. Da-da-da-da. The star. Travel. Someone will travel to see you or will call on you upon his or her return home. Papers. You'll be involved in paperwork that connects the past with the present and fills in the gaps or elaborates on the original concept. Work and career. You will be unhappy with the status of your work and will want things to change or improve. Emotional state. Someone or something new is going to inspire you and give new hope or meaning to your life and affairs. Pleasure. You will be pleased about a new and promising opportunity or the birth of a new talent or career potential. News. Expect news, calls, or letters related to financial gain or profits. So see, this is a pretty good card. Family. A relative will have problems with reservations, confirmations, or legal documents. Really? I'm not sure how the star shows that a member of the family will have problems with reservations. I don't see anything at all. The physical body. you will gain insight into the root of a problem and take steps to correct it. This could also indicate medical tests or workups in the offing. That's not very nice. Am I looking at the right card here? It's Arcana 17, the Star. Finances. Don't worry about your finances. You'll make money in the long run, and your prospects for the future look. I'm thinking that this is not 100%. Mail, M-A-I-L. You can expect money in the mail or news that someone has some money for you and wants you to pick it up. Ha 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 ha. I got to laugh about that. Someone has money for me and they want me to pick it up. I like that. But then let's see, it goes on to the next page. Anxiety, disappointment, endings, new beginnings, inheritance, rewards, gifts, success, fortune, blessings. You'll be grateful for spiritual assistance, inspiration, or guidance, and or money or means. Well, all right, so there's best course for action. Follow what you know to be true for yourself and with deep sincerity and a firm resolve. And in due time, your star shall shine. An outcome. Okay. And then it's followed by the moon. And the moon has a bunch of other, about 20 or 30 different categories. Some of them are the same with a few differences. So anyway, yeah, if you wanted to learn tarot, that would be a kind of book to get. I'm not sure if it really works for me, though. I'm not sure. You might also want to get August's Astrological Archive, and that is by myself, Ed August, and that's a book available on lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. Oh, boy, ID 343-4133. Oh, that's the book, I guess, 343-4133. More than 100 astrological and related topics are discussed, with much new data and interesting discoveries brought forward in the most interesting and readable database of astrological lore to come out in the last few years, in the inimitable style of author and astrologer Ed August. You know, life is hard, and we live in strange times, and we oftentimes don't really know what to expect. Things are changing out from under us. Just when we think that we know what's going to happen in Washington, it just goes crazy. It's hard to tell really what's going on. But that's why I think that self-discovery that people can get by looking at these arcane and old but very useful methods to gauge their lives and to see what direction they're going in and to improve their lives really, really works. It's justified because of the craziness of life, because just believing in God in the heavens and thinking everything's going to be okay may work for some, but it may not work for others. Some people want to get right in there and have a look at the chart. Have a look at the chart of what your life is all about. Compare your chart with that special person in your life to see if you're destined to be fellow travelers, to be lovers, to become to get increase and benefits in life together, or if maybe it's a tragedy in the making. Make sure that you're in the right city. I have a book here called Horoscopes of the Western Hemisphere, which has hundreds of charts for cities and states and countries. And using this book can really help tell whether you should be in Boston or Atlanta or Seattle or San Diego or anything in between. I mean, I kid you not. Don't you feel that different cities have different personalities? Have you never driven into a city and fallen in love with it, but other cities you drive into, it's like, meh, well, I don't know, you know, and just start feeling miserable? That is the human condition, because each of us is primed to be successful in a certain area and to particularly go down to defeat in another area. Unless we have the perfect partner. If we have the perfect partner, then we can survive in an area that isn't all that good, but we still are not going to have the best life. Now, if you have the perfect partner and you move to the perfect city or state, then you can be jubilant and you can have everything that you want. That's pretty much, in a nutshell, how astrology works. Well, hey, we're at it looks like we're at that time. It's 1:30. I haven't heard anything from the screen, but it looks like we're we're going to switch over now. We're going to switch over now from Ed August's World to Mad Scientists Exposed. And thank you very much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you again next Tuesday. Okay, bye for now.